Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to The Shift, the podcast that aims to tell the no-holds-barred truth about being a woman post 40, created and hosted by me, journalist and broadcaster Sam Baker. My guest today has lived a lot of lives in her 50 years. If you were knocking around in 1990, like I was, Amanda de Cadenet burst into your world when she became presenter of the seminal late-night TV show The Word at just 18 and appeared most days on the front of the British tabloids. Like many young women trapped in the public gaze, she has spent the rest of her life wresting back control. Since moving to the States in her early 20s, she has achieved international success as a photographer. She was the youngest woman ever to shoot a Vogue cover. She created and hosted the Conversation podcast series, in which she's interviewed the likes of Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton, Jane Fonda. And she founded Girl Gaze, which saw her named one of the most creative people in business by Fast Company. But what does 50 look like when you've been in the public eye since the age of 16?
The only thing I know is how something feels. Oh my God, I can't, I don't, why did I say yes to that? Or do I think, oh, I'm really looking forward to doing that? And I'm not saying that I'm like, oh, I feel afraid. That means I shouldn't do it. Am I feeling fear because this is something that I shouldn't be doing? Or am I feeling fear because I'm going out my comfort zone and I have to sort of differentiate?
Amanda joined me from her home in LA to talk about the lifelong project of reclaiming her own narrative, surviving onstage perimenopause moments, going back to basics after losing her dad, not having a five-year plan for the first time in her life, and why the new love of her life is a camper van. But we started by talking about the impact of being constantly shamed by the British press in her teens.
I feel like I've been in the public eye for such a long time that I, on many levels, don't care. And on some levels, the older I get, the more I just don't want to deal with aggro. I might not think that something is worth paying attention to, but the rest of the world does. And so you're like, okay, you know, it's not a big deal for me that that person said that thing or I said that thing, but the rest of the world really takes things like what you say, like insanely seriously. And so, you know, it could like ruin your career.
That's the trouble, isn't it?
That is the trouble. Otherwise, I don't think I would care. And I think because I grew up on English TV as well, you know, I grew up hosting live TV. So you're not thinking, like, you're just going with it. Like, whatever comes in your head, you kind of say, you know? And so I've had to really learn that you cannot do that, especially in this culture.
I mean, you were catapulted into that culture at what, 16? When, how old were you when you started on The Word? Was it 16 or a little bit older?
Yeah, I was 16 when I started hosting TV, and I did a show, the first show on Sky, that was a music show. It was like 2 hours long. I wish I could get hold of that footage because I would love to see it. And then I did The Word. So, you know, it's interesting because The Word was such a phenomena. It was a show in the 90s that was just so revolutionary. And I sort of feel like we need to capture a bit of that essence again. You know, everyone's so precious. It's just not fun.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of going, you know, everybody going back when I was watching it when I was a student, and everybody going back from the pub, you know, everybody went to watch it. And it was the kind of anarchic nature of it that was the draw. I mean, it was just
yeah, you never
free.
Knew what was going to happen. I think that freedom is so invaluable. It raised me to be very free. I mean, I guess I could have gone the other way. I could have just kind of not said anything publicly. But, you know, it's funny. I found a video. I reconnected with Brooke Shields recently. And it took me a couple of months to sort of remember that, oh my God, I interviewed her. I've interviewed her before because we were talking about doing an interview together. And I was like, hang on a minute. I've interviewed her before. And I searched online and I found a video of me interviewing Brooke when I must have been 17 and she must have been, I don't know, 21 or 2 or something. And, you know, I'm asking her all kinds of things that I would never ask her today. And I sent it to her and I said, we both forgot that we've done an interview together before. And I was just thinking about, you know, I grew up asking very provocative questions to people, not thinking anything of it, you know, and it was really like schooled me in being unafraid to ask, you know, tricky questions.
I mean, Brooke's another person who, you know, was thrust into the public eye quite young and really got it in the neck. But I mean, what kind of impact did that have on your mental health? Because it wasn't just, you know, the TV work was great, but it's the rest, wasn't it, when you were in the UK and just the fucking tabloids at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I experienced such monumental trauma. That I don't use that word lightly. And I would say a big T trauma, not a little T trauma, from being the focus of the tabloid media in the UK as a teenager who is trying to individuate, trying to work out who they are, and is also on TV. It was an impossible task. There's just no way you could have succeeded at that. And my mental health was severely affected. And in hindsight, when I look back, I was put into a children's home when I was 15. And really, you know, what should have happened is that I should have been put into a treatment center for mental health, you know, for depression, for alcoholism. I got sober at 19. So I worked out pretty soon that I had a problem with drugs and alcohol and that I had mental health issues. And it took me getting away from the UK, unfortunately, because I did not want to have to leave my home and my family and everything that I knew in order to, you know, escape this very difficult life that I had, that I was living in. And that has really affected me because it has meant I've lived in another country for 30 years. And it's taken a lot of work to process and heal from my experience as a teenager. You know, it was pretty it was pretty devastating. Terrifying as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was brutal from outside. I mean, I'm kind of 5-6 years older than you. And from outside, it was just, they just didn't leave you alone. Not for 1 minute. How much worse do you think it would have been if social media had been in the frame, or better?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that the tabloids had so much more power because they were the only way that people had access to famous people. And you also didn't have a voice. So, you know, in my case, you know, News of the World could run a cover story saying something really heinous about you. And you had absolutely no way to counter that other than to sue them and possibly years later get some kind of tiny retraction.
Yeah, on page 15 or something. Yeah. Bottom right-hand corner.
Yeah. So it's like a waste of time. So I think that they had a lot more power then. And I think that social media has taken the clout away from tabloids in a way that is great, you know, although people do still look at the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail is still one of the most viewed publications and, you know, .com, dailymail.com. And, you know, they're part of the machine, you know, they are definitely part of the machine.
Because I was just thinking, you know, that kind of, I mean, social media's always been kind of like two, giving with one hand, taking away with the other, or vice versa, because it does give you the power to speak out and to speak for yourself. But the flip side of that is, you know, is the pylon, I guess.
I mean, I think, you know, what has been really awful to see is how social media has become one of the most valuable currencies for so many people. The amount of followers and the amount of engagement, all of those things mean so much. And they really shouldn't. You know, films are being cast, TV shows are getting cast, brands only work with people. It's all about what are your numbers. It's like we've become numbers. It is very Orwellian, but we have become numbers. And it's, you know, it's like Sam Baker and here's your number, which is the total of your social media followers. And it does. And if you don't have a certain amount of numbers after your name, then you're not valued. And that is terrible. Because if I posted pictures of myself in a bikini every day, I would have more followers than talking about, you know, women's rights and mental health issues and, you know, all the stuff that I talk about. And so, you know, you have to decide, do you want to play that game? And I was thinking about this. Who is not an influencer? Everybody is selling something. Everybody. And some people, it's not even their fault. They have to try and earn a living. And so everyone is selling something. And the pursuit is not of happiness and joy and purpose and connection. The pursuit is of clicks and numbers and followers. And what kind of empty life is that? That is your purpose. And yet you can't really succeed in many ways unless you have that.
You know, having your, because really as a young woman, your image was totally how you were seen and how you were judged and what people thought of you. I mean, I know this still applies in many cases, but was absolutely controlled by someone else, wasn't it? In that case, initially by the British tabloid media. How much of what you've done as a slightly more grown-up woman, once you're into your mid-late 20s, has been shaped by, I don't know, reclaiming your image and being in control of it?
A lot, a lot. I think when I also became a photographer, it was something that people, I was speaking about this with my husband last night, that even 20 years ago, one of the most desirable jobs was being famous. And so people didn't understand why I would choose to not be in front of the camera, why I wanted to be behind the camera. And I think part of that was that I started to take my own self-portraits. And this is before the selfie or digital cameras. We had, you know, it was on, it was with film and it was with a timer or a cable where I would take the pictures. And I started to do that because my longtime manager, Jason Weinberg, who was then my publicist, said to me, "You always complain about the photographers that publications are giving you, and you don't like they always want to photograph you the same way. You're a really good photographer. Yeah, just take your own pictures. We're so sick of you complaining, and just take your own pictures." And that's how I started taking photos, was by wanting to document myself, how I felt I was. And that was a huge impetus for me because I needed to, I couldn't work out who I was while I had an image projected onto me all the time. And I really got a real sense of who I was in reality by taking my own photos of myself. Reclaiming that narrative has been a sort of ongoing process. I think it was very reactionary for a long time. You know, my advocating for people to have a voice and my advocating for women to be heard and to be listened to and to be paid attention to and to not just be asked about their husbands or sexualized. I think that was largely in reaction to my own experiences. And then there hit a point in my life where I no longer had that wound to react to in the same way. And so I had to find a different impetus for doing what I do, because it wasn't reactionary anymore. It was like, oh, what do I really care about when I'm not using, when I'm not reacting to trauma, if you will? Like, then what? And you sort of have to rethink why you're doing what you're doing, because in many ways, I think a lot of us choose careers. And I know from interviewing people, and I'm sure you know, when you start to ask people, you know, I interviewed a woman the other day, Dr. Romani, who's a phenomenal expert on narcissism. And I was like, why did you choose this career? What is your experience with narcissism that made you want to do this? A lot of us choose career paths because of our own experiences, and we're trying to repair that early experience through what we're doing as adults. And that was definitely me for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, looking back at your career since your probably mid late 20s when you became a photographer, it definitely feels like that. It definitely feels like kind of trying to wrest that back. There's something that you had no control over through your teens and early 20s. So how long has the perimenopause been making itself felt?
Well, it's interesting because you don't really know what's going on at first. You're like, something weird is happening. And it was like, I don't really know what's going on. I couldn't work out whether, you know, I had gone through I was in the grief of losing my dad. My dad died, and I had to close my company, Girl Gaze. And one of my best friends kind of like stopped speaking to me. And I had all these losses and I couldn't really work out what was happening. And then that was like 18 months ago, 2 years ago. And then I thought, I need to get my labs done. Like, something's going on here. And I actually reached out to Davina McCall, who I've known since I'm 14 years old.
In the same gang, yeah, around that time.
Yeah. And I was like, I think something, or maybe she reached out to me and said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "No, I'm really not all right. Is it obvious?" She's like, "Yes." <It's
obvious." laughs> Oh, no.
She was very helpful and said, "Even if your labs don't show anything, everything you're telling me sounds kind of like you're in perimenopause." And it hasn't been that long. And I don't have massive symptoms other than my memory. I would say the brain fog is the worst thing. I actually thought, like, maybe I have early onset dementia.
Oh my God, I've heard that so many times. So many times. Yeah, it's really common for women of around about like late 40s, early 50s, this starts to set in. We weren't really aware that there were mental health symptoms around perimenopause until recently. And, you know, immediately think the worst because nobody's told them otherwise.
Yeah, I think there is a real lack of education. And I'm in a group of women. We're all on a text thread and it's a multi-generational group. So the youngest girl is 24 and the oldest is 70. And there's about 18 of us. And the women in that group have been an amazing help for me because I was like, I don't know what's happening here, you know? And I started doing all these brain tests and memory tests. And, you know, I don't think I have early onset dementia. It's definitely a process, you know, and one that I'm, you know, educating myself all the time about.
Yeah, it's the Substack that you started to mention. I really wanted to talk to you about that because when I got that, I just thought, I mean, you kind of, but I'll just, for the listeners, you just started, I don't know what's happening to me lately. I don't feel like the self I have known for so long. To me, that's the defining thing about perimenopause. But what was really interesting to me about that was that change in your approach to ambition and drive. You've been on that hamster wheel since, well, 15, 16?
Yeah, long time, my whole life. My whole life. Yeah, I wrote that piece and I'm really, you know, am I a writer? I write, I've written a book. I can write. I'm not used to writing as much as I'm writing on Substack. And again, as I said earlier, you know, putting things out in the world that, you know, I am not really sure how it's going to land or what have you. I could easily not write anything. But I wrote that piece and it really was kind of from my heart, which is that I don't really recognize parts of myself. And it's sort of frustrating in some sense because I think, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I don't have the same ambition and I don't care about the same things. And what does that mean for my life? You know, like what's going to happen here? And it is quite scary in the sense of everything that has motivated you before, motivated me, isn't there in the same way. I think I've been kind of calling it like I'm following the threads. You know, it's almost like when I was a teenager, I was trying to work out who I was and what I cared about. Actually, as I'm saying this to you right now, and based on what we just discussed with the years of me choosing a career that was reactive to trauma, I almost feel like for the first time in my life, I'm making choices that aren't reactive choices. They're very intentional choices. And I don't know what that's going to look like, Sam.
It's so interesting. And I agree. It's so frightening because you refer to your drive to succeed as a young woman as a survival skill, which I totally get that kind of immersing yourself in busy because that, you know, that becoming who you are and maybe, in fact, definitely for me anyway, also being a way of not looking at some things that maybe you don't want to look at. And it's, you know, that taking a step back and going, okay, who am I if I'm not just going hell for leather all the time? What does that look like? And what does, that doesn't necessarily mean you're not ambitious anymore. How do you want to reframe that for it to be less relentless, I guess?
Exactly. And I don't know the answer to that question. And I'm having to be okay with that. One of the things I retained when I was at school was learning about Russia and Stalin. And I was appalled at most things about him other than the sort of 5-year plan that he created. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. I'm going to do that. And so I've always had these kind of you know, plans. And I don't have a plan today. My plan is I'm showing up to talk to you right now. And we're doing this. And is that your dog walking around?
It's my cat.
Oh, hello.
He likes to make his presence felt. That's...
Oh, I have so many animals. So I'm so used to it. I'm doing this. And then, look, I am working on things, obviously. You know, I don't even need to go into the things that I've got going on, because...
I know what you mean, because that impetus is, but I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Isn't it? The impetus is, but.
Yeah.
You know.
And I'm actually being disciplined and not doing that, saying that right now, because it's actually like irrelevant. Like what I'm working on is very relevant to me, you know. I am reframing my value being based on my output. And that takes a discipline for me to not get on here and talk about my output. Because if I'm asking the world to reevaluate how they value people, including me, I must do that for myself. And it must start with me.
That's easier said than done, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard. And, you know, it's a process. But you know what's valuable is that I'm present with you right now. I'm being present. And you know what I do every day? I put it... Did you see the photo of my camper in that article that I wrote? That camper is such a piece of junk, right? Like, nobody can believe that I got this thing. People are like, what is going on? I love it. I love it. It makes me so happy, that thing. I drive it around. I decorated it on the inside how I like it. I've got all my books in there. I've got my incense in there. I've got my cozy bed in there. It does not have a music system, so I have to plug my iPhone. I have to like jimmy rig my iPhone into some like Bluetooth speaker. You know, it's a whole thing, but I love that thing. And I had to send an email to my neighborhood to let everyone know that it wasn't a meth van, you know. But I love that thing, and it brings me such joy. And so every day, I'm not saying I really do take it every day. I take it somewhere, to the park, to the beach, to the mountains, and I sit there and I look out the window and I take a nap. I read a book. I work on my book that I am working on. I do things that are nourishing for me. And I turn my phone off. That brings me joy.
And how hard has it been to give yourself permission to do that every day?
Not hard at all.
Brilliant.
Nope, not hard at all. Because I know how valuable it is. I don't have like a kind of, like, if that brings someone joy. I think when I went through the loss of my dad and all the losses, I really went back to basics. You know, it's like, okay, I've got a very prolific career. I'm talented. I'm capable. I'm successful. I'm smart. I'm healthy. What do I want to spend my time on? Who do I want to spend time with? And I really went back to basics. And for a few months, I didn't spend time with anybody but the women in my little group who I met with on Zoom once a week, my dogs, my children, and my husband. And I did that for a good 8 months, sort of incubating, just kind of like going, okay, you got to strip it all back and just really get back to basics. Like, where do you feel good? Who do you feel good around? What do you feel good doing? And I really paid attention to that. The reason I shut my company was, A, during COVID, nobody was hiring female photographers or anybody to work. But B, it brought so much chaos into my life that I could not do it.
It's a special sort of hell that nobody tells you about, being CEO of a tech adjacent startup, isn't it?
You have got to be, I don't want to be say crazy, but like, it is a certain kind of person. And you know what? I am not that person. I'm someone who cares about other people. And that is why I founded that company. I don't care about career advancement or getting the biggest paycheck, or like, I don't care about corporate anything. I just care about helping people. And I used, you know, I'll use whatever medium I can to do that. And I've had to look at that one. Why do I care about helping people more than helping myself? And so I've stopped doing that. It's validating. You get external validation. What I have done is stopped helping. I have addressed the need to have public validation for helping people. And I help people and support people privately in a significant way. And that is actually more rewarding because it comes from a very different place.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a line in your piece, which I just really thought, absolutely, yes. You know, he said that when he said, I just don't want to pay the price anymore, kind of square brackets of success, not mentally, physically or spiritually. And I just think that is exactly it, isn't it?
It is. And it is a price that people pay. And I've been around successful people my entire teen and adult life. And I have a community of people who, if they are successful, a public forum, are people who all have a very healthy and appropriate relationship to the public piece of their lives. But there is a price to pay. It's not a price. I just don't want to do it. You know, I think that, you know, as I said, the sad reality is that the biggest currencies in the world today are social media and sex. And how desirable you are and how many followers you have is not something I want to be a part of. I'd rather have less followers, be less desirable, and feel that I'm spending my time doing something that I feel good about. You know, I don't want to be a part of that machine that does not value and respect integrity and authenticity and compassion and kindness and being of service and critical thinking. And I have my people who value that. And that's kind of where I stay.
As you've got older, have you felt the pressure to kind of jump through those hoops, you know, to look a certain way, to have a certain sort of body, to maintain your looks, because you've always been and still are incredibly attractive? Do you feel that I can't go grey, I've got to have Botox, I've got to stay in shape in order to stay relevant and in the game?
Understanding what the currency is in the world, yes. And I've never been someone who has really adhered to what the currency is in the world. You know, it's interesting. I did a collaboration with Victoria's Secret for 3 years, and I was part of something called The Collective, which was a group of women, myself, Priyanka Chopra, Megan Rapinoe, Naomi Osaka, Bella Hadid, that they put together as a kind of guiding voices to replace the Angels, which had a long history of being associated with a company that's values were not aligned with today's values.
To say the least, yeah.
Yeah. So it's very interesting being a part of that because, you know, when I would go to Victoria's Secret events, I mean, I was the oldest woman in a part of that collective. And I never really thought about age before in that sense. And I was like, wow, I am the oldest woman. And I've always been the youngest woman for so long.
Yes,
so much of my kind of notoriety was around how young I was doing all these things. And it's sort of an interesting shift and an interesting reality. And I'm still kind of not really sure what that means. And I'm sure, you know, more will be revealed. But No, I'm very much in a season of whatever and whoever I am, whatever I want to do, whatever feels right for me is what I'm going to be doing.
So when you were in that environment and you realized that you were the oldest woman in the room, and I absolutely know that feeling, and that kind of feeling kind of struck me probably in my very late 40s, early 50s, when I had a kind of tech adjacent startup. You know, you kind of basically had 23-year-old blokes kind of going, well, impress me, you know, old bird. How did that kind of manifest? Did it manifest, or was it just in how you felt?
I really felt like, oh, you're doing great, Amanda. You're doing great. You know, like you've been through a lot, you've learned a lot, you're really capable, like you're wise, you know, like I feel good about myself. I really do. And for so many years, I didn't, you know, and a lot of the women in the room who were involved in that project, for example, and even some of the models, the girls, you know, I know those girls. I have lovely, many of them, I have lovely, genuine, connected relationships with those girls that are based in integrity and authenticity and truth and vulnerability. And it was really lovely, actually, to be able to look around and go, oh, yeah, I have real connections with people, no matter where I am, you know, because that's what I bring. That's what I bring to the party. And if you're interested in that, there's a space for us to have a connection. If you're not, there isn't. Those people are not really interested in me. You know, they're not going to be curious about who I am at all. They're just, you know, say hi and move on. And that's fine for me. You know, I don't have time for it either. If you're not, you know, if you're not bringing yourself, I don't really know what to do with you either.
I think that's, for me, certainly that was the thing that really happened in the last, say, 5 years or so from 50, that kind of, well, it's not worth my while. You know, I don't this doesn't mean anything to me anymore. So I'm not going to carry on jumping through the hoops and trying to be whatever it is that, you know, trying to fit whatever shape I've been trying to fit for the last 30 odd years. I mean, there's so much talk about, you know, women falling out of sight as we get older, in a kind of a male gaze kind of way, and which is kind of consistent with what you've been saying. And it's like, I just wondered what your take on that was, given that so much of your photographic work was about actually putting the female gaze into the picture.
It's interesting because I've got some women friends who in their late 50s, early 60s, they're some of the most dynamic, beautiful, smart, wise women that I know. And certainly from the outside world's perspective, people would go, oh my God, that woman is stunning, you know. And I think that we are in a time where women are not dropping out of sight in the same way. It is a slight shift that I see when, even though culture is obsessed with youth and the kind of newest thing, I see more women who are elder, very front and center today. And that's reassuring to me. Look, J-Lo's an anomaly, right? She's an anomaly. She's got great doctors. She's got access to all the bits and bobs she might need. I look at her. Another woman who is doing a beautiful job of being in her body and being present and really being who she is Tracee Ellis Ross. Right. Demi Moore, another woman. There are, you know, that's just, you know, three women. But if you look at Naomi Watts, if you look at Brooke Shields, look at Annette Bening, look at Jodie Foster, look at Helen Mirren. You know, now there aren't 10 Helen Mirrens. I mean, I'm pulling up just off the top of my head women, but you know, there are women over 35 are more visible, I think, than they've ever been. That's progress. That's definitely progress.
So if you were, you know, you were saying earlier about kind of being driven by trauma in the first part of your career, or maybe the first, we split it into maybe the first two thirds. What's driving you now?
I don't know. I have no idea. It is a period of time that I have been following the threads. I don't know where that's leading. I don't know what that's going to look like, what shape that's going to take. The only thing I know is how something feels. I'm very much paying attention to that. How do I feel when I am doing something? Do I dread it beforehand? Do I think, oh my God, I don't know. Why did I say yes to that? Or do I think, oh, I'm really looking forward to doing that. And I'm also, it's not just like, oh, do whatever feels good, because you could feel afraid of something. And I'm not saying that I'm like, oh, I feel afraid, that means I shouldn't do it. No, I could be, I feel afraid and I have to go out of my comfort zone and really look at, am I feeling fear because this is something that I shouldn't be doing? Or am I feeling fear because I'm going out my comfort zone? And I have to sort of differentiate. So I'm really paying attention to what my intention is, everything. What is my intention? Is my intention to spend time with this person because it looks good or because it's nourishing? I'm being of service to them? Or like, what's my intention? Am I going to that event because I need the validation of being photographed and looking good and having people say, oh my God, you look great? Or am I going because it's an evening with people that I'd like to connect with and that I'm curious about and that I want to know more about that subject matter or that place or I'll be sitting with people who I don't know, and maybe I'll make a new friend. You know, it's really kind of being very, I'm very clear about my intentions with things, you know. And by the way, if the intention is just to go and get photographed and have and look great in a great outfit, nothing wrong with that either. I'm just very clear. I'm not doing anything kind of unconsciously. I'm making choices that are intentional. And I feel that that will take me in a direction where I can only flourish.
It's kind of, there are things that you're saying that are resonant with so many of the conversations that I have. And it feels to me like moving away from the shoulds, if you like.
Oh, I'm going to borrow that, Sam.
You're welcome.
Thank you. You're going to see, like, you'll see that quote from me somewhere else. I'll send it to you because I'm going to say it. I've got a couple of interviews coming up. I'm going to say it.
Oh, that's all right. Right. I'm going to ask you the questions that I always ask at the end. What is your emotional age?
Changes every day. It could change multiple times in the day. When I was speaking to my teenage daughter this morning, maybe I was about 14. Speaking to you right now, definitely 51. It changes throughout the day, depending on where I'm at.
Give us a book recommendation. So it can be something you've always loved, or it can be something great that you've read recently. And you've got an absolute ton behind you.
Yeah, I love books so much. What is a book that I absolutely love? Oh my God, I'm looking at my bookshelf. I love Helen Van Meen's photography. Her work is incredible and I love her work. That's a photography book that I love. A written book that I love. I mean, I'm reading a book right now called Wise Power about menopause, which is incredible.
Oh, I haven't read that one.
Oh my God, it's so good. It is so good.
I'll check that one out and I'll put a link in the show notes. What advice would you give younger women?
That's funny. That's a question that I used to ask people on my TV show 10 years ago about what would you ask your 14-year-old self. What advice would I give younger women? Nothing is permanent. This too will pass. The good, the bad, the indifferent, it will change and you just have to hang on through the difficult moments and don't give up on yourself.
Who is your old bird role model? So an older woman who inspires you.
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Love her. I love her so much.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
The Oscars with her and Michelle Yeoh last year was just such a seminal moment for me. Because she seems not to play the game at all.
She is authentically herself and she is a true and committed supporter of the women in her life. And I feel extremely grateful to be a woman who has her support and love and care. She's a very special woman.
And I feel extremely jealous. What's your superpower?
Being able to intuit people's true selves.
How does that manifest?
I'm very good at reading people and I get a sense of who they are by their energy. I know that sounds very kind of woo-woo, but I've had that my whole life. Really, it's why it's so confusing when someone behaves in a way that is like not what I know them as. But people change. And so you have to keep kind of reassessing who people are. But I think it's why one of the reasons why I'm a good interviewer. I'm really curious about people and I'm also good at reading people. That's a survival skill, though.
Yes, yeah. I think that it's not uncommon for people at this point to say that their superpower is empathy. And I often think that that is a double-edged sword, in that it often comes from a childhood of hyper-alertness.
I've always been very empathetic. It's why I've created careers that are helpful to mostly women and girls, because I do have a lot of empathy from being on the receiving end of things for a long time. And you can be over-empathetic, where you put your own needs aside for other people. And that is not actually a healthy thing to do too frequently. Sometimes you do, as a parent, as a partner, whatever. You're like, you make that compromise to put that person's needs first, but it cannot, you know, the amount of time you do that cannot outweigh the time you prioritize your own well-being.
And last one, how many fucks do you give?
Zero. Of course. Zero. That's a great question.
And I was waiting for you to backtrack, because so many people, it's so interesting. I'm absolutely fascinated by this. So many people say zero, and then they pause and they kind of go, well, maybe it depends. And then they immediately, and they start like rolling back their zero, but no, you just reinforced your zero, and then you reinforced it again.
Yep. That's how I feel about it.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy The Shift and would like to show your appreciation, why not buy me a coffee? Go to www.buymeacoffee.com/theshiftwithsambaker. You can hear a new episode of The Shift every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please do rate, review, follow, tell your friends, because it really does help other people find us. And if you'd like to know more about my own experience of shifting, my book, The Shift, How I Lost and Found Myself After 40, and You Can Too, is out now in paperback.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.